This is 1320 WILS. Dealing with trauma and trying to get over it, it's something that can be very difficult to do. Many people never really recover. My next guest has over 30 years of clinical experience as a clinician. She's the founder of the Ferenc Institute. Lisa Ferenc joins us. Her brand new book, Finding Your Ruby Slippers, Transformative Life Lessons from the Therapist's Couch. She's a clinical social worker, a psychotherapist. Lisa, great to have you on WILS.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Over 30 years of experience in private practice. And is there something people with, let's say, low self-esteem that share, that kind of have a common problem that you can kind of fix in one shot?
Oh, boy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could? It's hard to fix it in one shot, but it is something that absolutely can be strengthened over time. Mm-hmm. So even if somebody has spent a lot of years of their life not feeling good about themselves or walking around with, you know, unprocessed trauma, certainly when they get the supportive therapy, they can really blossom and reclaim a very positive sense of self.
Okay, so how do you know when you have low self-esteem? What are the signs of that?
You know, people who have low self-esteem often put themselves in situations where they are perpetually mistreated. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're in relationships that are not particularly respectful. They're in workplace environments that are not validating and often are actually quite toxic. And it doesn't occur to them that they could, you know, do better. So they tend to stay in life situations that are not particularly fulfilling, mm-hmm. and are often disrespectful. They often walk around with a lot of sense of shame and guilt.
So when they end up in your office, do they typically understand that they have low self-esteem?
You know, sometimes yes, sometimes they do, and other times no. So it's kind of been normalized for them. They've gone through much of their lives talking very negatively to themselves, being somewhat mistreated, and unfortunately, there's a familiarity to that, and it isn't until therapy kind of shines a spotlight on some of that that they then begin to have the realization, you know, that they've gone through life really hating themselves.
So how is it that nobody in their life, a friend, a spouse, no one's ever sat and told them, look, you're not treating yourself very well?
Well, see, part of the problem is, again, they surround themselves with people who are not particularly respectful, and so they don't necessarily get those messages, mm-hmm. from significant others.
So what is it? They're not attracted to people that treat them well? Is that it?
You know what? They don't feel worthy of people who treat them well. And often what happens is if they do land in a relationship that is loving and respectful, they will sometimes unconsciously sabotage that relationship, so that often it doesn't last.
That sounds complicated. So
if
by the way, Lisa Ferenc with us, the book, her brand new book, Finding Your Ruby Slippers, Transformative Life Lessons from the Therapist's Couch. So if someone's lived this way for 30, 40 years, how do you change them?
You know, again, the first step really is for them to be open to the possibility of talking to a therapist. And what I do in my work is begin to gently point out to them the way they're talking to themselves about themselves. Uh-huh. I always pause the work when I hear them make statements that are either very self-deprecating or untrue, or are shaming in some way. So step one is just really helping them to gain more awareness, uh-huh. about the fact that they live in this place of often self-loathing.
Is it always because of some kind of a trauma that occurred to them as a child?
I would say often it is. It is. You know, the way we're treated in childhood gives us a lot of information about who we are and how we should feel about ourselves. And so people who grow up in families where they're abused or neglected or mistreated or they've been emotionally abandoned in some way, they tend to interpret those experiences as being about there being something wrong with them. And that's kind of the seed that gets planted that leads them to believe that they're not worthy and they're not good enough.
Okay. So, how do you know when you've been neglected or abused versus your parents just weren't perfect?
Well, there are no perfect parents, so we'll say that first. But, you know, it's growing up in a way where you feel alone and isolated, where you don't feel heard or understood, where your thoughts and your feelings are ridiculed or invalidated or ignored. And then certainly there's being physically abused or, God forbid, sexually abused. And so those are more extreme versions of trauma. But often it can manifest as just feeling invisible in your family and feeling that what you feel and think and want really doesn't matter to anybody.
Do most people have at least some of that in their growing up years?
Well, unfortunately, the statistics are that, you know, millions and millions of people do experience some form of trauma, abuse, or neglect by the time they're 18 years old. That's not to say that everybody has grown up with that degree of dysfunction. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there are millions of people walking around who had very painful childhoods and often don't name that experience as trauma, even though, you know, mental health professionals recognize that it is traumatic.
Okay. Now, sometimes make more, though, of an event than it really was? Can you maybe over-dramatize something when it should not have been that hurtful?
It is possible, but I'll tell you, what matters to me as a therapist is really the meaning that people attach to what happened to them. And so even if to someone else, objectively speaking, the experiences don't sound particularly traumatic, mm-hmm. if the individual walks around feeling traumatized by those events, that's kind of all that matters.
Now, so, do some people, though, do they get almost addicted to being kind of connected to this trauma? Is it like part of their life that they want to hold on to?
Well, you know, I wouldn't use the word addicted, but I would say that for some people it becomes an identity, and maybe that's what you're referring to. They identify as being a victim. They have a victim mentality. They go through life not being particularly proactive. They feel sort of trapped and stuck. They don't take a lot of risks.
Is it hard to break them out of that?
It is, because, you know, there's safety in that, right? There's safety in not taking risks. There's safety to some degree in going through life feeling helpless or powerless. And so when people get their power back, which is something that the book is all about, is helping people to access their inner wisdom and strength and to feel empowered, with that also comes responsibility. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a big leap for people to realize that now it's up to them. You know, no matter what has happened to them in the past, really now it's up to them
to figure out. You can't blame anybody at that point. I should note, January is National Codependency Awareness Month. Is codependency connected to having low self-esteem?
Very much so, very much so. Because what codependency means is that you go through life thinking that you can only be happy if someone else is doing okay. So it's like people say, I'll be happy when my husband can stop drinking or my wife can change her behavior. So rather than looking at your own inner strength and your own inner resources, you become very focused on fixing and changing other people. And that can become your life's work. And the problem is we don't ever fix or change anybody other than ourselves.
Okay. Oh, really? So it's not just a matter of feeling overly attached to somebody. It goes beyond that?
It goes way beyond that. So there's a lot of enabling. There's kind of making excuses for the poor behavior of the other person. And again, it's this core idea that it becomes your responsibility to fix that other person.
So if you're codependent, is one person a taker and one's a giver? Is that how it works?
Yes, but I've also worked with couples where they're both kind of equally taking or equally giving. Mm-hmm. So you can have that play out in a couple of different ways.
Because it seems like codependency could actually lead to a long-term relationship, too. Is there any connection there?
You're saying that people are in long-term relationships?
Codependency, that dynamic can keep people together for many years.
Yes, very much so. Despite the fact that it can be an incredibly dysfunctional relationship, or an unsatisfying relationship, or even an abusive relationship, you're absolutely right. That dynamic of I've got to stay so that I can get this other person to change often keeps people in the relationship way beyond when it would be healthy or safe for them to stay.
Learn a lot more about how to overcome many of the difficulties that you face mentally. Lisa Ferrance, her brand new book, Finding Your Ruby Slippers, Transformative Life Lessons from the Therapist's Couch. Lisa herself, over 30 years in private practice as a psychotherapist. Lisa, thank you very much for joining us on WILS.
Thank you. Yep. Take care.
You too.